Today's show is brought to you by the Star City Murders.
Yes, the new film of mine, The Star City Murders, is out everywhere now. You can get it on Amazon Prime Video, Apple TV, Vudu, many platforms, satellite cable for rent or purchase. It's great. We also have a DVD and Blu-ray release. So if you're into serial killer, thriller, detective stories, this is the movie for you. Check it out today, baby.
Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. Check us out at dvrpodcast.com. Check out all the shows we're doing. Right now we're covering Mayor of Kingstown as well as House of the Dragon. And Gina and Jenny just finished Bridgerton Season 3. We have up on the Patreon at patreon.com/DVR a Patreon exclusive film list with Andy and Heath going over Heath's 10 or 15 or so of Heath's 1,000 favorite films. Yes, you heard that right. The HK1K, baby. Well, that voice you hear giggling there is Gina. Gina's here with me, of course, and we've got a great guest, Mike from One Mike. So let's get into it. Gina, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Excited to talk about this episode. It was pretty good.
It was. How about you, Mike? Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell, pal. How are you doing?
Oh, man, I feel like it's been a minute. It's been a while since I've been on Podcast Winterfell, hasn't it? I feel like.
I think, weren't you with us last season? I don't know. I'll look in the notes.
Yeah, but I mean, like, yeah. I know. It feels like it's been a while. But yeah,
it's been a while for us, too. The show wasn't on.
Right, true.
We didn't invite you because the show wasn't airing.
Right, that's why it feels like such a long time. It was. But yeah, man, ready to talk about this episode, man. Like you guys said, it was a good one.
Yes. Wow. What an episode. Yes, obviously we had a big death and dragons and fighting and it's getting on. Things are popping. And I just have to say, I spent the last, what was it? The last 15, 20 minutes, the kind of battle scene with my mouth open, just totally engrossed. This show, I've been thinking about it since the show where to start off the show by just saying, this show's awesome. I fucking love this show. And I loved Game of Thrones. I know people complain about the last. We all have a couple. But when you're in it, man, it takes you away. You're fucking watching dragons. Oh, man. It was totally awesome. I totally enjoyed it. I was swept away. It was just, I don't know. It was wonderful. Where do you want to start, Gina? We got a lot to talk about. Is there anything you're itching to talk about?
I mean, the biggest part, of course, is the battle, though Daemon and the Lords and his freaky dreams deserve some attention. But maybe we start with the I don't want to call it a big reveal, but I think it's confirmation. We had a lot of, we're like, oh, so Alan and Adam, they're Sir Corlys's bastards? Question mark. And I think we went over that with Jenny. And lo and behold, yes, at least Alan for sure is, and I'm sure Adam is as well, based on that conversation they had. So,
yeah, probably.
Yeah. And then, you know, the sea smoke when he was kind of flying around Adam that one day on the beach, then it, like, he was kind of sensing a, you know, potential new daddy rider. So,
yes, that was good. That scene was touching too, the way she just kind of touched his face and was. Man, she took that like a champ, didn't she? She was kind of like, yeah, I know what's going on. I mean, yes, she was upset, but, and I guess in this world, it's not to be unexpected, you know, but.
You think she was finding out in that moment or she had already known?
I think she knew. What I'm trying to wrap my head around is how old those kids are in relation to Corlys and Rhaenyra's kids, like or Rhaenys' kids. Sorry, there's too many R names in this show. Because I feel like Alan seems older than their past two kids, but that Adam seems potentially younger. So I don't know. I mean, if so, that was quite a long affair.
It's hard to tell because I feel like. It is hard to tell. And I don't, what makes you think that both brothers, from the conversation, that what was said that made you think that both brothers are?
Adam said something to the effect of it's owed to us. Or...
Oh, us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I dig that.
Yeah, that was the impression I got too.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I guess we'll see. Yeah, because we still, I mean, Lenore is alive. He's not dead.
Yes. I continue to try to remember to bring that up because, you know, the show wants us to forget about him and we're not going to forget about him. Just like we didn't forget about Gendry. Like we're not going to forget about Lenore. He is very much alive. And now if they are kind of angling toward something with Alan and maybe becoming the heir to Driftmark or whatever path that he might end up taking, Lenore being the, I'm assuming, trueborn natural heir, he's going to pop back up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what happens in this episode might, once he gets news of that, might be cause for him to come back.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too, because remember, I mean, Rhaenyra was laying into him about how he wasn't there for them and all this kind of shit. And now it's like, you're really not there for anybody. you really just want to play your days away with the boys and battle and, you know, hang out in the locker room or whatever you do. That's what he wants to do. It seems like at this point, like, people are dying. Like, you have a dragon too. So that's what I find is like, Are they setting up some sort of, does the dragon get taken away from him and he comes back? I don't know. And how does that work too? Like, if a Targaryen, once they're bound to that dragon, do they have to die for another person to ride their dragon? Or if they don't ride it, does the dragon does that bond dissipate?
I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a good question.
Yeah, we'll have to tune into History of Westeros to find an answer to that one.
I feel like that's something that probably, if we were closer to when Game of Thrones was on, we would probably be able to fashion up an answer to that question. But I feel like it's been so long and that we're so kind of separated from the lore as a whole that it's kind of difficult to guess on that. But I bet if we were closer to Game of Thrones, we'd have an idea.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back of, like, thinking to the history books, not the main books, because there's so much more dragon stuff and this story in particular and, like, the original Aegon, everything. I can't remember somebody jumping on someone else's dragon. Like, usually the person died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or couldn't ride.
While she never rode him, Danny, you know, Jon Snow rode one of Danny's dragons, true, but she was always kind of riding Drogon. So
that Drogon was her dragon.
Yeah.
We never even saw her.
Yeah, she kind of, she did kind of have, because she had spares. So it was kind of like, it was easy for Jon to just kind of hop on one.
Take my spare dragon.
I don't think we ever saw Jon ride Drogon, so
no.
That would be kind of the equivalent.
Yeah.
No. So we got that, and that was was that the last time that we saw this couple together when they were discussing this, or were they? Oh, I guess they were there together at the council. The council, right?
Yeah.
But this was, I guess, maybe what we get their last kind of, there's a reason for that, right? Like that this is revealed in the episode that she dies and what it kind of maybe shows their family is, their family, which had been pretty strong, right? Well, besides the fact that the sea snake disappeared for like 10 years or whatever and almost died, is kind of crumbling in that sense. But I don't know. Let's see. Maybe we should talk a little bit about good old Daemon, because he starts out the episode and we get a continuation of his Harrenhal hallucinations. And
alliteration.
I know. Right? I was trying to think of another one, but I couldn't. His hellish Harrenhal hallucinations.
Nice.
cuts off Rhaenyra's head. And you knew that head was going to start talking. Everybody knew that was going to happen.
I loved it. It was good.
Yeah, I thought it was good. But you know what? last episode, when we had Amy on, we talked a little bit about his first hallucination, but I guess I was thinking about it later, and I don't know if we got into the guilt that maybe he's like the guilt and the pull that he's feeling. And I thought it was very interesting that after all the kind of ups and downs he's had with Rhaenyra, that in this hallucination, this dream, whatever it is, she says the thing that has not been said, which is that, like, you're mad at me that your brother loves me more than you. And that's when he chops her head off. Like, whenever it came to his brother, he got so possessive. And he, I mean, obviously, he, that was the one person he treated with reverence throughout the series. Well, the best that he could. But I don't know. Yeah. What did you think of all this Harrenhal stuff, Mike? What do you take into all this hallucinations?
I really like how they dig into his doubts and his regrets and his innermost feelings. And like when you talked about Rhaenyra, like kind of like poking at him about Viserys loving him, I mean, loving her more than him. That's something that they played around a lot with that too. And when she, I think it was one of the earlier hallucinations. No, it wasn't hallucination. It was real life. When they were talking about that right before he left for Harrenhal, she said something like, no, it's not about that. It's about he couldn't trust you just like I can't trust you. But he's never seen it that way. He's always seen it as a betrayal and why can't it be me? And I feel like if we do get to a point where the events of this episode, I think, the events of the end of the episode, I think, kind of can open a path even more so for Daemon to do what he's internally considering doing. If he does end up taking that path, I think that they've done a really good job of making me buy into it. Like the watching his path from how he was at the very beginning, feeling spurned when it wasn't him, to where he was supporting her, to now he's showing all of this doubt. And I think these flashbacks and Harrenhal have done a really good job of showcasing that. I don't want a third episode in a row of him tripping balls in Harrenhal, though. Like I get it, but I think they've done a good job, I think, so far. And I found these to be really interesting.
Yeah.
And I feel like the woman, Alice, I think. Her name was, I found her to be really, really, really fun in her scene that she had with him this week.
Yeah, definitely. I thought everything is great about this. And it could be, I don't know, you could be getting the kind of Arya stuck in the face with the faceless guy, like where it goes on and on. You know what I'm saying? But the fun thing is every time he turns around, he's has some wacky character, this little kid, Alice, right? Like everybody is kind of interesting. And I think that they're doing a good job. Overall, the show is doing a great job when they're bringing in some new character. It's somebody that's kind of interesting and that you're like, oh, what's going on with this? But I'm sure you have a lot to add to this. What did you feel about him chopping off Rhaenyra's head and all that, sleeping in a weirwood bed? Look, I did it. That was a rhyme. That wasn't alliteration, but.
I mean, I was calling this Daemon's weirwood brew enhanced midlife crisis. Yeah. and it's, you know, I'm starting to wonder if true he's sleeping in a weirwood bed, but I think a lot more what's happening has to do with Alice Waters, that she is some type of witch, you know, in kind of the after spiel on the show, they say Alice Waters potentially has been alive for hundreds of years. And that kind of takes us back to both like the Woods Witch that gave Cersei her premonition about what would happen to her children. It takes us into kind of the Red Priestess. Yeah. We kind of touched on that before. I thought she kind of looked like one of the Red Priestesses from GOT. Yeah. But, you know, having this kind of very strong magic. And then it also made me wonder, considering Laris Strong probably grew up at Harrenhal for a time and Alice Rivers was there, what if she's like a pawn of his? Like, you know, one of, because he's so freaking creepy, like it would totally make sense that they were like buddies when he was growing up at the castle. And then it makes me wonder if he knows she has this strong magic, if he's not in a hurry for Sir Criston to get to Harrenhal and doesn't care the castle's been seized by Daemon, then has he deployed Alice as kind of this witchy quagmire to get Daemon all befuddled and stuck there and not thinking clearly and stagnant, so he can't be of any use to Rhaenyra. So I was almost thinking, because at first I was like, it feels like maybe Aemond wants to keep him there. And then I was like, well, you know, Aemond's probably chummy with Larys and, you know, as well. And this feels like a Larys thing. It feels like he's behind this somehow. The bewitching of Daemon through Alice. So
I like that.
I was kind of thinking it's like a bigger thing, and and this is kind of like, do you remember? I'm going to bring up Harry Potter. You remember when?
Where is this going?
Well, do you remember when they're like on the Hermione, Ron, and Harry are all on the run after Voldemort's return, and they have a Horcrux and they take turns wearing it. And anytime Ron wears it, he gets like just really like surly and like angry and like has this like kind of very strong impact on him, makes him really jealous and doubt himself and his relationships with Harry and Hermione. It's like Harrenhal's a huge Horcrux for Daemon. So that's kind of what I was thinking about. But yeah, I feel like there's more, like, yes, there's magic here, but I feel like someone's like behind giving Daemon the magic whammy from a strategic standpoint.
Mm. You know, that makes sense, because the visions are not, it's not just like at night. And like the last time it was at night and then he wakes up near the weirwood tree, right? So I'm thinking, okay, something's going on. But right now he's drinking stuff she gave him and he's kind of tripping through time as well, right? Like he's losing track of time. Like all of a sudden he's at a meeting and talking to everyone else and he thinks that it's his ex-wife giving him the wine, right? And it's like happening all the time. So I like that. I like that idea. That's very interesting. Either way, again, I just like this stuff. I think that it's fun. It's part of the magical elements of the show. But I do agree with Mike. Coming into next episode, I like to see Daemon as a man of action and do something. And because normally it's kind of fun when he does. So I'd like to see that happen pretty soon, but who knows what's going to happen with Alice River. She is interesting. I like that idea of her being like a black magic woman taking him over.
Kind of a secret agent to Larys as well.
And that's what, and Larys did seem to be very convinced, as if he did have someone there making sure that it was, as if he already knew it was happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I mean, if he probably did, because he's from there.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, he probably understands that this is going to be happening to Daemon. And, you know, we talk about another episode of it, part of the intrigue of this, at least for me, is what are you going to do now? So it's like, yeah, I've enjoyed the process. Like, I'm liking this digging into Daemon's subconscious and self-doubt and all of those things and exploring all of those things. I'm enjoying that. Mm-hmm. But now I'm sitting here like, okay, so now what's he going to do about it?
Yeah.
Like when he gets into one of these moments where he has some sort of lucidity, like how is he going to respond? So like, I'm ready to get to the response now. So like that's, you know, I'm not trying to speak ill of what we've seen so far, but I do feel like, okay, like we've explored this. Now let's see how's Daemon going to react from this? Where is this going? What do you have planned for this path for Daemon? So I'm ready to see where that's headed.
Yeah.
I think there'll be one more trip and balls scene, and then somehow he'll snap out of it. Like,
yeah, no, there's got to be
the next episode.
No, yeah. I don't want it to be, I don't want us to end the next episode and still kind of feel like we haven't really gotten anywhere
exactly.
with Damon. I expect there to be more, especially because after the conversation that he had with Alice, I feel like there needs to be another one. Like, you just can't have that be a one time conversation and appearance by her. Like, well, I mean, we've seen her, but, you know, like, one-time conversation. So I do think there probably needs to be another scene with her, but I think something kind of needs to come to a head in the next episode.
One other thing I'm going to say about her magic and how it relates back to kind of everything we know about Game of Thrones is she said, "I'm a barn owl cursed to live in human form," which, of course, reminded me of wargs. So I feel like she's, you know, she's got all the juju going on.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
I only jokingly made fun of her saying she was a barn owl. I was like, maybe she actually was. maybe it's her favorite thing to enter. Like,
her favorite word.
Right, yeah. Like before it was before ravens, they used to use barn owls. Like, I don't know.
Which, you know, something George never freaking finished the books and probably never will, but I always had a theory. They never did it in the show. I always had a theory that Bran would warg into a dragon. And so, I mean, if Alice does turn out to have warg abilities, it's like she should warg into a dragon. You know?
I think we all thought of the possibility of Bran warging into a dragon, and it's just one of the many reasons why we need George to finish the books, because that shit was gonna fucking happen, man.
I was a
quick little sidebar, but I was talking to a friend about the events of the last two episodes of this show, and he had missed, shorten this down, he had kind of missed the whole thing about the prince that was promised prophecy. And I wasn't going to explain it to him or anything like that, but it just made me think in my head, like, if I started to explain it to him, I would have had to been like, yeah, that's the thing that was obviously Jon Snow, but then they just pivoted at the end and then just sent him to the wall. And now it's like, yeah, it's hard to explain the prophecy now because the guy that it looked like it was supposed to be, they just didn't do anything with it. It just made me irritated about that again. So, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, you know, though, I've been thinking a lot about that, ironically. Not ironically, I guess, because they're talking
about
it so much.
Yeah, it's happening. It's up again, you know?
He was the one that ended up uniting people to fight the various realms to fight the dead. And it wasn't so much Dany. He had to convince her and bow to her to get her to do it. But he was the driving force behind it. If there's any doubt, if it was John versus Dany, it was John.
Yeah, no, it was definitely John. Yeah, but then the show was just like, and now Bran is king, and John goes to the wall, and I'm like, what the fuck?
I know.
Anyway,
well, he had to continue being a grunge head and go camp in the woods for Woodstock 25. All right. Anyway, one thing I did want to mention too about this Harrenhal stuff is I love the part when Damon is following what seems to be Aemon, but then he turns around and it's himself with an eye patch. Like it's like a mix of them. And I find that really interesting because they did that a couple times towards the end of last season where they had them looking at each other and recognizing like, what the fuck? This is like a mirror image, you know? And we're also temperamentally similar as well.
Well, and they also have crown envy issues.
Yep.
And I also think that to me, the theme in a lot of his visions is, again, his subconscious like doubts and things that he has regret over or concern over. Yep. And I also looked at that as he sees Aemond as a threat, like a potential, like a serious threat. And Damon obviously outwardly dismisses everybody, like nobody can fuck with me. But I think that shows that he does deep down feel like Aemond is a threat.
Well, Aemon does have the biggest dragon by like three or four times. He just his dragon just killed the second largest dragon, and so like I watched carefully, and I'm like that his dragon's at least 3 to 4 times bigger than the second largest dragon in this show, at least per the things I've seen mm-hmm. about, you know, who has the bigger dragon. But then I was also thinking about, you know, those guys who drive like super jacked up pickup trucks, and it seems like they have an inferiority complex, or, you know, small Eamon. Weenie complex. It's totally Eamon. It is. Like, he just one of those big jacked up trucks. I thought I put a picture of a big jacked up truck in the notes somewhere. Oh yeah, I did. Above the battle. It's like a super jacked up truck. It's got to be jacked up to be like 20 feet tall, and like a smaller car is just crunched underneath it.
Yeah.
It kind of explains the dragon battle.
It was shocking. We will talk of the dragon. One thing I wanted to bring up, because it just popped in my mind when we were talking about Daemon. Just in the distance that it takes to for him to get to Harrenhal or whatever. And I guess this week there's a couple articles that came out. People are talking about, oh, they're bringing back the long travel time. Like, I guess there's no more Littlefinger teleporter or whatever, right? Like, it, they just get somewhere in one day, right? Like, they get from Dorne to the Wall in like an hour or something. But back in the original episode, remember, it took them weeks to come and visit Ned and remember from King's Landing, they made a big deal out of it. In this episode, they brought it up a couple of times, and more specifically with the time thing, which they rarely do in this show, where Allison says basically it's been less than 2 weeks since the king died. And then you're like, 2 weeks? Holy shit. We've been waiting 2 years. Right? Like, that's 5 episodes?
2 weeks, and she's right? already knocked up with another guy's head.
Yeah, well, we should talk about that too. But did that strike anyone as, I thought it was good that they did that, actually, to show that things actually are moving rather quickly. But I don't know whether it behooves them to get into travel times and time and all that kind of stuff.
So the reason that's never been much of a concern for me is that in Game of Thrones, for all intents and purposes, there were no dragons. And now everybody on this show essentially can commute by dragon. So like, if they say, you know, somebody was, you know, I don't even think like, oh, Dorne is so far, like, I don't even think about it anymore, because I'm just like, well, they're hopping on a dragon, and I have no basis for like how long that should take. I'll have no idea how fast dragons fly. So yeah, I haven't really thought about that. So yeah. I wasn't particularly blown away to hear the 2 weeks thing.
But I don't think Daemon's trip to Harrenhal would have taken that long of a time. I mean, he's probably only been there like really a few nights, because, you know, Jace has been to the Wall and back.
But he does have a dragon, though. That's a bit, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once the dragon gets involved, you can get places.
You can get places.
I have quicker. No frame of reference for dragon. How long that could take.
Well, we know that Danny got to pass the Wall in a very,
like 40
Game of
minutes.
Thrones, in a very, very quick amount of time to save those guys.
Where was she? Was she at Winterfell?
She was a Dragonstone.
Oh my God.
And she flew past the Wall, remember? And Gendry ran very fast.
Yeah, that was.
Oh, yeah.
That we should not return to.
He's as fast as a dragon.
Yeah, that was crazy. But you know what? It always is quicker coming back than it is getting somewhere.
I was just telling someone that the other day.
Yeah, it's always quicker. But Allison. We see her take the moon tea. Gina and Jenny shared with us via text. No one wants to have Kristen Cole's baby. Rhaenyra and Alice, they're both like, they're Eskimo sisters. And they're like, hell no, we don't want this guy's fucking kid. So she takes the tea. And then there's an interesting point there where she asked the maester about what does he think? That her son should, who did Viserys really want to be king, which was to me kind of like a strangely gentle moment, or like naive kind of moment, you know, that shows that she would ask, oh, he's the maester. Maybe it would make her feel better about this. Like, it's really bothering her still. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I think that was just to let us know that she truly is now accepting deep down that she was wrong about Viserys having changed his mind. Like she, you know, at the end of the previous episode when she just left, you know, after her and Rhaenyra's conversation, you know, you could tell in that moment that they both kind of came to the realization that a mistake had been made and that Allison just didn't want to own up to it because, I mean, why would she? It's too far gone now, at least in her opinion anyway. And then like that her asking the maester, that kind of felt to me like she really is like, shit, man, like I might have been wrong about this the whole time. Let me see what this guy thinks. But yeah, I thought that was interesting, too. There was a lot going on in that scene.
Yeah. And then we see Laris comes in and he knows what's up. So he does. I mean, he knew they were fucking. I think that he
probably,
you know, and he's playing a long game. He's just, you know, he's just kicking the can down the road. Get it? Kicking with the
with his one good foot.
Yeah. I crack myself up. But it's interesting because when they sit down in those chairs, that's where they've before had their exchange, their foot exchanges. And it's kind of like there's an uncomfortability, like she gets a little tense. And then she's like, no news for you today. Like, no need to whip it out. We're just sitting here right now. I thought that was very interesting. But he's not being as crafty as I thought he might be. Maybe he's just happy being the master of whispers.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I thought he was going to be making a lot harder of a play to be like Hand of the King or something like that. And he just kind of seemed like he kind of stepped aside for Kristen Cole and was willing to take the Master of Whispers. But I do still think, like, when you said he's playing the long game, he's playing the long game.
On several fronts.
Yeah,
for Hand and for Allison as well. Like, I think, I mean, they've been fairly good not showing extreme violence towards women. Like, it's been more insinuated than what we saw in Game of Thrones. But I have a feeling that if there's any, like, kind of graphic rapey scene, it's going to be between these two.
Oh.
Daenerys and Allison?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
He's a predator. I mean, he's, you know... he's gross. He's gross. He killed his father and his brother.
That's true.
Like, he has no problem with kinslaying.
Yeah.
You know, his two closest relatives. He'll have no problem with other deviant acts.
But she even gets into it with him about Aegon and Viserys and his intentions and all that, which was interesting too, because originally they did have a beneficial relationship, right? Like they were trying to work together. And it seems like maybe instead of being angry about the Cole thing, he's a smart dude. He's like, okay, she's going to talk to me. I'm going to talk to her. And I thought that it was an interest because I thought something, I don't know. I thought this was going to end like you're talking about. He was going to do something or there was going to be anger or a fight or something, but it didn't come out like that at all, which I liked.
Well, but I think they haven't been on good terms. I'm trying to remember when the foot play come in? Was that before he murdered his brother and father? Something happened where she just started looking at him differently, like when she kind of really knew what he was capable of.
Yeah.
And I think she tried to distance herself.
That was
from
when
him.
It was.
And I can't,
It was when they died. Yep.
Yeah. I think it was that. Yeah. Because he tried to make it sound like he was doing that for her. Like she asked him to do it. And she's like, I ain't ask you to do that shit.
Yeah.
So I think that was it.
Yeah, Allison. Well, we'll see after the events of this episode where she stands, because she stands to gain some sort of power here too, I think, when you have what may be a vacuum, which we're going to have to, we should have debated before the beginning of the show about how much we're going to say about that. But I guess we'll get to it live on the show. But we did get a good scene of the small council with Aegon getting upset and doing his Joffrey, you bore me. You all bore me. Didn't Joffrey say the exact same thing?
something similar. This is boring, probably. Yeah.
I think that was I wanted to go back and have a chance to go back and try to find that. But I think there was a scene, Bubba and Catfish probably know, but they didn't mention it in their episode. But I thought that was taken exactly from, because he has a Joffrey in him, but he's not as fucking insane as Joffrey. But I like the strategy that is happening here. And I was totally taken off guard. But I guess we should talk about when they talk High Valyrian too. When Aemon kind of puts Aegon in his place, that was awesome.
That was a great scene. That was a really great scene.
Everyone put Aegon in his place this week. This week.
That's true. That's true.
Including the ground.
But yes. Yeah.
But, right.
But yeah, the scene with Aemon was great. I mean, he's Aemon's just another, you know, slithery fellow.
Like, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what I loved about that scene was that scene felt to me like Aemon knew in that moment that it was over. Like he took over. Like, he's, this whole time, he's kind of been allowing Aegon to fuck with him and hasn't really said anything. And in that scene, he confidently was like, yeah, this is what's happening. We're doing the Rook's, what's it called? Rook's Rest. We're doing the Rook's Rest. This is the plan that me and Cole came up with. I think the Harrenhal is stupid. We ain't doing that. It's like, okay, where did this come from? And then you have the High Valyrian conversation where he's using big words and shit. And then Aegon's like, me make war now, or whatever the fuck he said. and Aemon made this face that confirmed two things for me, only one of which I will say now. But at least one of those things was that he knew that in that moment that he had Aegon beaten, in the sense of like, he's not a problem for me anymore. Like, I don't have to worry about him being an issue for me. And I thought that was really cool. He said a lot with his face after Aegon's little whatever poorly conjugated sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I also think that Aemon, since the time when he still had two eyes at a funeral, basically said, well, I would marry our sister if it came down to it. Yeah. And I think from that point in time, and maybe even before then, Aemon always knew he would be a better leader for the realm if it came down to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that he was more, you know, more whatever to, you know, was qualified to be king, even at that point in time without a dragon.
He's strategic. He understands it. And do you think that this goes back? Because we saw him playing with the coin, right? Which is the coin that falls off the map that he and Cole were talking about. And that's when, I think, didn't Otto come into the room just before, right, in that scene? And then do you think that they were planning that out? And this is like, that's a kind of key to, like, a little nod to the audience that they were trying to plan something like this from the beginning?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like it. Because you know what? They totally fucking fooled me. When that dragon pops up, I was like, oh, what the fuck? I had no idea what was going on. I thought they were going to lose. And I thought Cole was going to die. And I was like, oh, shit. So I love that they did this strategy shit and brought it back to that. And it was just kind of reminding us something's going to happen, right? A little foreshadowing. And that's what happened. The coin too, just that little game of going through the fingers. Like, he is manipulating everything. I thought that was really fucking cool.
Yeah. I think I made a note that Aemon's strategy is on par with Ramsay Bolton's, for however disgusting Ramsay was. Like, he was a great strategist, like how he wiped out Baratheon's camp when they were trying to siege them, you know, how he went after Jon Snow and the wildlings. Like, you know, that guy had ideas of how to take down hosts of, you know, hosts and armies. And yeah. I think Aemon's the same way.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, the Valyrian thing was cool too. That was good. Me make war.
Me make war now. Well,
I just love when they start talking like that. And that shows too that he is, you know, he's read the books. And interestingly enough, that's what, when Alicent comes in talking to Aegon later, she's like, where are all the books? And he's like, I removed them. I didn't burn them. And that, again, that was, again, like maybe even a hint to him, like, I should have read those books, you know, after, right? Kind of like after being showed up by his bro. And then, and he gets so mad in that scene. And then it's the exact opposite of what happened last episode, when Laris knows what the fuck is going on and exactly what to say to get him off the dragon and take your fucking Valyrian steel armor off. Don't fight. But this time, dumbass Alicent, mommy, says the exact worst things. Right? Like the sacrifice that made to put you on, like making it out like you didn't earn shit. We manipulate. Now him getting a feeling that he has to prove it, and then we get what we get. So I thought that was a great balance of those two scenes of how to do it and how not to do it.
That was another example too of how similar Aegon is to Joffrey. That was how Joffrey was in the Battle of Blackwater. Very much kind of like, yeah, I'm ready to go get in the fight. But as soon as someone gave him an excuse not to, he's like, oh, yeah, I got to go. like that was same shit that Aegon was on. Like, oh, yeah, you know what? Maybe I am being a little hasty.
Yeah, I am the king.
And then he had to be liquored up to do it this week.
Right. There was a meme I saw, you know, how he's like kind of bats that that cask with his hand a couple times. It was someone like, Aegon's actually a cat, you know, because he just kind of taps it. That was pretty funny.
Oh boy.
Oh, the memes that come out of this like are so amazing sometimes.
People are having fun. It's good to see it too. It's good to see people happy. That, you know, we have been talking about this before this show came out, like, are people going to still, because things were dire in the Game of Thrones world there in that last season, folks. We all know that. People were not happy. And it was seeming like the show was getting kind of a bad rep overall when it was so awesome. I'm glad to see people very happy, both book readers, and they picked the perfect thing too, because book readers can't complain too much because there's so many different interpretations in that book itself, and it's a history, right? So right. I think that it makes it just podcasting about this and reading about this and listening to other pods, people are really enjoying this story again, and that makes me very happy.
Yeah, I got to get back on my companion reading / listening, like I was doing with season one. I was kind of I was audio listening to the audiobook along with the show.
Oh, interesting. And
yeah, just kind of like I'd watch an episode and then I'd listen up to the end of that episode with the book. And it actually ended up spoiling me on the season two premiere because I didn't realize the season one finale ended kind of like in a middle point in the chapter. So I listened to the end of the chapter and I was the whole thing that played out at the beginning of the season with the kids and the cheese and what's his face and cutting the head off, killing the kids, that I knew about all of that before this season because I listened to the end of a chapter, listened to a chapter all the way to the end. But yeah, I haven't done it this season, but I need to get back to that and kind of get that supplementary listening going on. Cause you can always get a lot more stuff to go along with that.
Well, the book itself has a lot of other stuff you can just skip over.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the book.
And the other one, the history, what was the one, what fire, this is Fire and Blood, but then they did another one where it kind of goes through.
I always forget
the name of that one.
Me too. I can't remember that
it
one.
It goes into
I have
each
a physical
place
copy of
and
that
it's
one.
History. Like it's like Dorne. Mm. Right?
Yeah, I have a physical copy of that.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I only have an audio book for the one that this is based on.
And that was something I really liked in this episode too. I like all the talk about the different places, right? The Tullys and the Brackens and the Riverland and this place. And I love getting to see this reminded me Where was the just kind of the way they framed the castle itself? Remember the fish guy, where Jaime, they led the siege on that castle?
Blackfish,
that was right.
The Tully's place.
Okay,
yeah.
That was the Tully. Oh, they're right. Oh, no, I was just talking about Tully's. But this castle, kind of the way it was framed against the hill and all that, it kind of looked like that. It's just so beautiful, man. Every time they show us something new, they give you such a good sense of space and where things are. They're really expert at that. All right, let's talk about this battle. Let's get into it. We have a little bit of Cole, little bit of Criston Cole and Sir Gawain before the big battle begins. And Cole is like, we're going. And Dwayne from What's Happening.
We should just call him Sir Dwayne.
Sir Dwayne. Hey. Imagine, it's like, hey, Criston Cole. Hey. Rerun, put down that recorder. What are you doing? Oh, look, it fell out of his jacket. Oh, damn. That was a classic episode when Rerun recorded. What band was that again? Do you remember?
I don't know.
Does anyone remember? I can't remember.
No, I remember the Doobie Brothers. But I don't remember that specific.
It was the Doobie Brothers. Day. Yeah, it was a Doobie Brothers concert. Anyway. I didn't know what was going on. Mike, how about you? Were you surprised by the tactics of went on here, or did you pick up something was going to happen?
So I figured something was going to happen. I didn't read it as what they were saying straight up, like Cole saying that we were going to go to Rook's Rest and we're going to take this place for this reason rather than going here. Like, I didn't believe that. I figured it was a setup. I just didn't know what the plan was. So when it got to the point of Rhaenys saying that she was going to go over there, I'm like, okay, I feel like Cole has a plan, but did he account for this? And now we know that that was probably his intention, was the expectation that someone was going to come over from Dragonstone. They pointed out how close the location is to Dragonstone. But at the time, I'm like, okay, did he account for this? Does he know this is going to happen? And then when Aemon sees Rhaenys arriving and Cole is like, where's Aemon? And we see Aemon kind of just like hiding in the bushes on the second biggest dragon in the history of Westeros, just hiding in the bushes. That's when I got confused, because I'm like, okay, so now it seems like Cole don't even know what the plan is. So that's when I got kind of confused. But I love how it played out. And I love how, in retrospect, a lot of things that I made note of prior, but like a lot of those things still made a lot more sense after the whole thing plays out. But yeah, I mean, I suspected something was up, but I had no idea what it was. And I really enjoyed that, because I didn't even have a guess. Like, I didn't even have I think this might happen. Only thing I knew was like, I think Cole has a plan, and it's not what he just said. I think he has some different plan, him and Aemon, but that's that's as far as I went.
Well, you were smarter than me. I love the way they set it up. And also with the stuff that went on in kind of Rhaenyra's small council too, and Rhaenys standing up and saying that she was going to go. It just kind of threw me. I thought that this was going to be her opportunity to finally let loose that dragon. They tricked me, man. They really tricked me. It turned out great though.
Yeah.
Can I just say real quick before I want to hear what Gina has to say about this, but we were talking about small councils real quick. We were spoiled by the small council on Game of Thrones by basically being the same people the whole time. Littlefinger, Varys, like Tyrion, like the go-tos. We were really spoiled with small councils. Rhaenyra's small council is so fucking shitty. I'm just like,
yeah, it is.
I'm like, man, and Aegon's isn't great either. So
right, yeah.
So I'm just like, man, like he's got that one Lannister. Like his Criston Cole. Like his small council's not great either. And I just noticed that watching this show. I'm like, man, we were really spoiled with the small council on Game of Thrones. But yeah. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, no, we definitely were. And that was a good question. Someone's like, you're not Hand of the Queen to
yes. Yep.
To Rhaenys. And I was like, how come she's not Hand of the Queen? Like, she's been probably the best advisor Rhaenyra's had. So, well, now she's definitely not Hand of the Queen.
She's not Hand of the Queen, but the Queen might go out into the field and find her hand somewhere.
God.
That was quick, but I'm bummed. Yeah, that whole scene was good, too. We also got the stuff with Jace and her telling Jace about the Song of Ice and Fire. They're really continuing. Now, maybe this is one thing that book readers might be like, oh, I don't know about this, you know, trying to kind of tie it into Game of Thrones. But I think they're doing a pretty good job of it. And I like that we don't have to hear it again. Like they just kind of, it's like it fades out like a pop song, you know, like it just kind of goes, she's like, I'm going to tell you something, son. And we don't have to hear the whole entire story.
Well, I kind of like the way they keep bringing it up because, and I don't think it really got into it in Game of Thrones too much. I think it was just touched on, or I remember it from the books. But one of the whole reasons that, oh gosh, all these Targaryens have the same names. Jon Snow's Targaryen father. Is he another Aegon? This is when I wish I was more of a
Rhaegar.
Rhaegar. I just looked it up. Yeah. Rhaegar.
Oh man, I don't know. It would have took me a long time.
So one of the reasons I always thought that Rhaegar pursued Lyanna when he met her was because somehow he had stumbled across.
Yes.
A text about the Song of Ice and Fire. So we know that someone somewhere writes this down, even if it's not passed from Targaryen to Targaryen, and that Rhaegar picks up the torch again, and somehow he has the inkling or insight to know that the Song of Fire and Ice, it's a house of fire and a house of ice that need to produce the prince that was promised. So
right.
I do hope that they, if we do continue to kind of like revisit it, that it is revisited in such a way as to kind of like, almost like we're following the prophecy as it moves toward Jon Snow. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah, like I want it to be like that, just because like, I don't want it to be like Axel said, like we don't need to hear the whole thing or anything like that, because if we were to hear the whole thing, it would feel kind of like, okay, well, I don't need to hear this, because not only do I already know it, but I already know it's not going to have an impact even all the way through the end of Game of Thrones. So I don't need to keep hearing the prophecy, because I know that nobody who's hearing about it is going to be in any way impacted by it, as far as like, you know, actually being the person. So like, it needs to just kind of be less about the prophecy itself and more about, hey guys, here's how the prophecy kind of moved through time. That's way more interesting to me than continuing to explore the prophecy itself.
Yeah. Well, I think we are going to hear about it again, because the only reason I say this is because I watched some lame little clip with the actor that plays Jace talking about how he and the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch in real life became great friends, because they did that scene at the wall, the first scene that we saw. And then the guy that plays Jace was going on vacation. He's like, hey, you should come with me. So they like went on vacation in Spain together, became best bros. And he's like, yeah. And it made a huge difference for the scenes we filmed together later on.
I
guess that was an early scene. So I have a feeling that these two fire and ice characters might put, now that Jace knows the prophecy, might put some stuff together. What happens with that?
We don't know.
But I think potentially we could hear about it again in that context.
I like it in that context.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I like that. Because that, even though I still will know, like, okay, whatever Jace is putting into works or whoever, even though I know it's not going to be like, you know, this person is the prince that was promised or whatever, like, I still do like the idea of creating a whole new branch of this story that revolves around chasing that. Even though I might know how it ends, I still don't necessarily mind the journey, kind of like the movie Titanic. Yeah. Like, I didn't like when people were like, why would I see that? I know how it ends, because it's a fucking movie. Like, you want to see you want to see what happens. Like, you want to enjoy the time. So, like, I could enjoy a journey kind of like following, like, especially because I feel like this show almost kind of needs to get out of King's Landing and Dragonstone primarily. So like following maybe a path where now we're spending a lot more time in Winterfell or something like that. I could definitely get into that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it too. And that the prince that was promised is book stuff. You know, they're reframing it a little bit, calling it a song of, I don't think it's called a Song of Ice and Fire in the books, is it? I'm not sure.
The prophecy?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, okay. I thought they renamed it for the show, and in the books they just talked about the prophecy of the prince that was promised to fight, you know, another long night.
I'm pretty sure it's called that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's called that. But yeah.
That was a thing that existed. So I think it's, well, again, it's a magical type of thing, which this is a magical world.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yep, it is. It's magic. All right. So, yeah, we talked about the councils, the fight itself. What the fuck? Holy shit. This whole battle. Oh, I was like, what's going on? I really thought Rhaenys was going to come in there, just really kick ass. And one thing I do want to point out is it took me until thinking about it later. This one thing is when Aemon is like, not yet, when he sees that she's there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because he wanted her to kill his brother for him?
I think it's because he was there for his brother, not for her. Like the plan, I think, originally, as Cole sees it, was that someone was going to come over from Dragonstone on a dragon and they would take that person and that dragon out with Vhagar, and
yeah,
Vhagar was going to pop out of the woods or whatever. And when that person, being Rhaenys, showed up, he didn't do anything because he didn't tell Cole his plan isn't to do that. His plan is for when he had egged on Aegon earlier with the whole High Valyrian scene and, hey, this is our plan, this is what we're going to do. He knew, he was fucking with him knowing that he was going to hop on his dragon. Like, he was expecting his brother to show up.
Oh, interesting. And he was going to use that chaos.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I thought it was
I think
that.
His plan the whole time. That's why he's been eating shit the whole time. And that's why, and that's when I said the second thing that I learned from that scene. I think the second thing I learned from that scene is that, the second thing that Aemon learned from that scene is that he was making the right decision. And that, like, yeah, this guy's not cut out for this job. I'm making the right decision and taking out this piece of shit. And that's what his plan was the whole time, was to get Aegon and then also to have the plausible deniability of getting Aegon in the midst of all this chaos.
Did you think that too, Gina?
I didn't initially until he went after Aegon when he could have taken out Rhaenys.
As soon as Rhaenys arrived and he didn't do anything, I turned to my wife. I was like, oh shit, he's here. He's waiting for Aegon. Mm-hmm. He's got it out for Aegon. Like, oh, he's making a move right now. So yeah.
Interesting.
That's what I believe happened. And now for me, the big question is Aegon dead?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, and let's get into Dragonfire and Targaryens a little bit, because
yeah, let's.
We, or even fire Targaryens. We know from Game of Thrones lore that Dany can withstand fire and dragonfire. She can, it can go through her, it can, you know, she can be consumed in it and not die. And
she
not
does get naked, though.
Her.
She does get naked.
Well, yes. However, what I thought was really interesting is Aegon did do a full-on frontal fire at Rhaenys. And I was like, oh, no, she's gone. And then we see her, and she looks completely unscathed. And I'm like, is this the magic of Targaryen fire retardant? Because she looked like a little, you know, tousled.
She looked like Santa Claus went down the chimney. She didn't look like she got blasted by fire.
But she wasn't burned.
Yeah.
And so that's why, yes, I am wondering, based on what we saw at the end, Aegon crashed with his dragon. The dragon still seems to be alive, but in really rough shape. I think Aegon is still alive. I wonder if he is burned or not burned. However, you know, Danny said once, fire cannot kill a dragon. Whether they're like a true kind of, you know, full-fledged Targaryen. I mean, it's not a blood thing. It's more, I think, of an attitude, like Danny's brother clearly was not. Danny was. Rhaenys seems to be, but is Aegon? Question mark. Maybe that has to also do with who's fit to actually rule, that that person can withstand fire, although it didn't really work out for Danny in the end. But yeah, so I'm wondering what they find, because Aemond was walking over there and drew his sword like he was going to finish his brother off that way. And Kristen stopped him. He's like, what's happening here? He's like, what? You know, and then, you know, Aemond picks up the famous Song of Fire and Ice dagger and puts the sword back in his sheath. And Cole's just looking, you know, kind of beside himself. Elf, I guess, but I think he's still alive. I think he's burnt to a crisp-ish. And I think if Cole hadn't shown up when he did, then Aemond would have, like, put his brother to the sword.
Interesting. Well, I have a question. Then how did Rhaenys's daughter get burnt by the dragon fire? I mean, I know she's not she's still Valerian. They're not Targaryen, but they're dragon rider Valerians, right? Valerian. But she got burnt up.
You know, going back into book lore, I feel like the Valerian people messed around with a lot of alchemy. And so that, you know, maybe some DNA in some bloodlines was altered to withstand the fire, but it's not necessarily consistently passed down.
Yeah. Or maybe it's because she asked for it.
Yeah, that could be too.
Right? This is a magic. We always have to throw the magic in. It's a fucking dragon. Dragons aren't real, ladies and gentlemen. So that could be that too. I think it's more interesting if Aegon's alive, because then we can get even more kind of intrigue or bullshit going on. And I think it does open up a kind of maybe a void or a vacuum for someone to step in, like an Alicent, or we still don't know what the hell is going on with Otto. Right. Yeah. So maybe Otto can come in. I thought the whole thing was awesome. I wasn't really even thinking like the way you were thinking strategically, Mike. You'd be good to have in a battle. My big dumb Irish ass just runs at the person. Like, that's what they have. You know, like, I'm like a Viking. I'm like, rah! I'm just watching it. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, I couldn't. It was just awesome. They did the special effects were awesome. The way that it's called the Dance of the Dragons, and you see the way they when they were grasping onto each other and spitting fire at each other while spinning around, I was like, this is fucking awesome. Like,
and then I think like one bit in the neck and then like smoke came out of the
really good.
You could see it like searing, right? Like burning and searing. And then how about when the dragon blood gets spewed on the people and they start burning alive.
That was sweet.
Was that blood? I thought the dragon was shitting.
Oh, okay. What? Maybe it was shit. I thought it was blood coming out.
I thought it was blood too.
I thought he was crapping the dragon his pants.
That molten shit.
Oh like, my God. Hot dragon doo-doo.
I don't think they wanted to prioritize making that part of the lore. Like, let's make sure everybody knows what happens if a dragon shits on you.
It was so cool. I mean, this was like, it really was like ballet. It was a dance. Like, it makes you understand that. They just really, there was actually, we had a few, thanks everyone on our Facebook page, Daily DVR TV and Film Podcast. We had a bunch of people, Kim and Josh and Isidore and Melissa and Juan and Andy and Francine and Janet and Alex, all with I'm not going to read them all because they're all a variation of holy shit. like they did it. That was what somebody said. I think Josh says it, said it. They did it. And that's how I felt too. I was like, wow, they pulled this off. If this is like what's to come, I can't wait to see more dragon shit. Like I'm not one who's always like, you know, I want to see the drag, but this was, man, this had me going. It was so artistic and beautiful and deadly at the same time with all the fire and the way the dragon was just stepping on people, you know, that was crazy.
I love how like everybody can get something different from this show. Like I loved all that dragon shit too, but like you're just like, I love the art of it. The dance, like it really was a dance. It was like a ballet, like all the cool shit that the dragon did. And like the coolest part for me was like the political stuff. Cause I ended the episode and I'm like, okay, well, if Aegon is alive, then this. Yeah. If Aegon's dead, then this. And I'm like, well, Aemon's like Aegon doesn't even have an heir. His heir is headless. So like if Aegon is dead, then Aemon is the next logical person to be sitting on the throne. But then they've been building up this whole thing of Daemon possibly making his own claim. So like, that's the whole thing. Like this, if Aegon dies, that opens up like Aemon to possibly move in, Daemon to possibly move in. Like, that's the stuff that excited me. I'm like, okay, I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. This plan completely blindsided me, and that was really fucking cool. Yeah. But now I'm just like, okay, now what happens? Because there's so many different things that can happen. If Aegon dies or if he lives, there's so many different ways that this can go. Aemon, if he lives, Aemon could still deny even having done anything in the first place. Like, I was trying to take out Rhaenys. Like, there's just so many cool things that can happen. And that's what the part that got me really jacked up. I'm like, we're only halfway through this season and this shit is going crazy.
That is awesome, Mike. And you bring up a great point there, which is that it's almost like the dragon actually killing... what's his name? Jace's brother.
Lucerys.
Luke, right. Actually getting the dragon.
I say
action.
The long version. It's like, who?
Luke, right. Luke. Thank you. Luke getting killed was actually the dragon, right? It was not Aemon.
Right.
We saw that. Yes. But that provides him some cover. He's a smart, slimy bastard. Now he's like, I can fucking do anything with the dragon and I could just say the dragon did it. So he can come back and they're like, you burnt up your brother. Or his brother's like, you burnt me. I was like, you can't control a dragon. They wanted to fight. You know, and then everyone else who doesn't ride a dragon is like, I guess that's what happens when you ride a dragon. Like, what the fuck do I know? I'm going to believe him.
Yeah. Well, and the only person that does know the truth and saw basically that dragon go for his brother and not for her is dead. Because I think even Rhaenys was like, oh, what the fuck just happened? Like, he just killed his brother. You know, it's just like, I'm right here. And the dragon went straight for him. But you know who's not going to buy, oh, it was my dragon's fault this time? It's going to be Alicent, because I don't think she believes it was the dragon's fault last time with Luke. You know, she thinks her son Aemond is a frickin' psychopathic monster. The only one she likes is Helaena. And then we've got Mystery Kid, which was not mentioned this episode. I don't think we're going to see Mystery Kid this season.
That's okay.
But, you know, if we do, it's props to the whole production, because it is not, if that person's cast, it has not come out yet. Like, they've been keeping it a best kept secret, which I think it could be like a really fun reveal if it turns out to be someone, you know, someone's nepo baby, or, you know, a great child actor from Britain or something. But, you know, we'll see.
They'll do great casting. That is interesting. And we didn't really talk about Rhaenys dying, which is, she had a chance to turn away twice. She had a chance to turn away. And she proved me wrong. I was doubting her. Last week, I was thinking that she was somehow, and I think they kind of were some red herrings there to make you question. So then when this happens, you're like, you feel guilty about questioning her, you know? And even earlier in the episode, when she says to her husband, he's like, because Of course, one of the things with the Littlefinger I didn't mention, we talked about that, is how it takes Rhaenyra so long to get back from King's Landing in the beginning of the episode. And then, you know, she says to her husband, he's like, where is she? And she's like, maybe being the only person trying to save us from this, from like war and death or something. So she really stood up and she was like, I could have stopped this. And she had to be the first one to stand up and take the dangerous job, which she did.
That's true. You know?
I think she's making up for not stopping this, because let's not now, and we can end that now too, right? Because she's fucking dead. But she could have ended it right there. And so anytime she was talking about people dying, I think that's, now I see those conversations she was having, that was the impetus there, is I think she started to feel more and more guilty that all these people were dying and she didn't take action, when she's always a person to tell people to take some sort of action, not war, but to make it right. You know what I mean?
I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
I'm also wondering, like, you know, yeah, she felt guilty, but then also I'm kind of wondering, not that I never got the sense that she was suicidal, and I didn't get the sense from her, like, seeing basically one brother take out another, but you know, part of her is probably like, I don't want to stick around for this shit. I don't care if I go down, you know, like, or if I go down, it might as well be now type of thing. I don't know. It just seemed her dragon was also so close to the water at the time it kind of went. Like, I was like, do something, try and get to the water so you might survive. But no, she just let it go, you know, she just, and fell backwards too, instead of on top of the dragon, which she might have had a chance. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think she was suicidal. I think it was kind of what Axel said. Like, she has been feeling the guilt of not ending it when she could have in season one. And this was her insisting upon redeeming herself.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to leave and head back and not have redeemed myself. And I head back to Dragonstone and I got to hear how I left motherfuckers alive twice.
Yep. It was like, honor. No,
I'm going back.
Yeah.
It was a That's Ned true. Move. It was a, yeah, it was a Ned move.
Yeah. I gotta make this right.
Yep.
And yeah.
She, yep. And maybe also
she made it right the wrong way, but
yeah, I mean, she had no, what could have she done? I mean, I don't know enough about dragon fighting. But I think that again, when his dragon.
Well, I also think she probably wasn't expecting Aemon to even be there.
No, like, not at all. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, because she said, "I'll go face Cole." No, or
neither of them.
Effect.
She didn't expect any other dragon to be there.
Well, no dragon. But yeah, I think she was expecting just Cole. Like, she said, "I'll go face him. I'll go face Cole," or something to that effect. So yeah, I mean, she was blindsided too.
Yeah, it was fucking awesome. When she gets on her dragon, they did a good job of scale too, like fucking with you. Because when she gets on her dragon at Dragonstone, they have this elaborate big ass bridge and the dragon's like standing up and she has to get on this bridge. And I said to my wife, see how big her dragon is? And then you see how big Aemon's dragon is in comparison to her dragon. And you're like, holy shit. So it's interesting. They did a really good job of presenting that scale, and it was just, the whole thing turned out awesome. Yes, it's sad she died, but guess what, folks? You better get used to it, because this is like, guess what?
This is nothing.
We've only
no
just
sweat
begun.
Off the brow here. Yeah, yeah. This is great news. This is nothing.
Exactly. Like, I'm seeing all the memes and everything, and I'm like, just cry your tears now, motherfuckers, because
I recently looked at a Targaryen house tree, and let me tell you, there was a year a lot of people died, and I think if we're not right before it, we're right there now.
Yeah, it's happening. Yeah, it's happening.
I love when you talk about scale, Axel. I love what this show has done with scale too, because like, they've done such a good job with scale that I want them to make a show about Aegon the Conqueror, just so I could see one shot of Beleriand, and just so I could see the scale of how, yeah, like how big is Beleriand compared to everything else. Like, yeah. I just want to see that shot. So they did such a good job with scale that I want them to create an entire TV show so I can see one shot. That's
I saw an infographic somewhere that has the size of the dragons compared. Let me see if
I know Beleriand's by far the biggest, which is why I want to see it. I want to see, I now see how much bigger Vhagar is than everything else. Now I want to see, I know I can't see Beleriand and Vhagar on the same screen, you know, but I want to see just the scale of Beleriand in that time. Just,
they
just
should.
A good shot of Beleriand flying over a city, and there's like a just a ridiculously colossal shadow or something like that. I just want the one shot. So he's make that whole show so I can get that one shot.
Supposed to be twice as big as Aemon's dragon.
Jesus.
Nice.
That's huge. They have to make, I think that this show is doing very well, and obviously it is so professionally and expertly produced that I would love if they did the Aegon the Conqueror. That would be really awesome. That would be really awesome. And if they started it, I would want them, like the book, the history, to start it before, like start it in Valyria before they came, before the Targaryens came. That would be awesome. Because that's
part of
that.
Yeah, I want to see Valyria. Yeah. I mean, I want to see that model that Viserys was working on come to life somewhere.
That'd be
so
awesome.
So if they did that and it was part of an Aegon the Conqueror show, how much time would you want them to spend pre-Aegon? Like would you want them to kind of do like what this show did and kind of shoot through a few years in a couple of episodes like they did in season one? Or do you want them to be like, yeah, let's give a whole season of Valyria?
You know what? I don't think they could do that. I mean, they'd have to make up a lot, right? Because it's not that, if I remember correctly, that much. But they could,
asking, what would you prefer? Like, what would you prefer, to spend a lot of time there or to just spend
I would.
Kind of speed through?
Yeah, hell yeah. Because that's the awesome shit. But we never got that. Like all the blood magic and the dragons and what actually had the doom and all that, that would be that would be a show in itself. But what I really would just like to see them leaving, at least, and then we kind of tell the history of the Targaryens that were at Dragonstone while shit was going on in Westeros. I mean, it could only be an episode, you know, but I think it would just be interesting to show that, because I think that's something that is important. Like, as we're watching this and we're seeing these dragons fighting, it's interesting, as knowing about the books and the history, to realize that the Targaryens are from another place. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're kind of bringing this shit to Westeros. So all the house histories that we hear about, like even like you were saying last week, Gina, predate even the Targaryens coming to Westeros, which is interesting,
even before the Andals crossed the Narrow Sea. That's how long the Brackens and the Blackwoods have been fighting. So a long time.
Probably, that's like the Hatfields and McCoys, right? That's
what
they are. All right. Well, Mike, I know you got to get going. We have been chatting for a good long time. I think we've covered almost everything in the episode. Is there anything else that you wanted to say, Mike?
No, I really wanted to get into talking about how that ending played out and all the good stuff about how I'm excited about what's going to happen next week and what the fallout is and if Aegon's alive or not. And I think we spent a good time on that and we all got our thoughts out. So I'm pretty satisfied.
Cool. Well, where can people find you? Tell us about One Mike.
Well, you can find me on YouTube. Just search One Mike, M-I-K-E. And you'll find me there. I'm covering right now this show, House of the Dragon. I'm covering The Boys. I'm covering Mayor of Kingstown. And I think that's it for right now. So those are the three shows I'm covering right now. I will be covering, what is it called? Natalie Portman and what's her face? Lady in the Lake.
Cool.
That's coming on, I think, FX, Hulu, something like that. One of those. Oh, no, it's Apple. I'm sorry. It's coming on Apple, I think, next Friday. So you're probably going to cover that. I don't see any way that's not going to be good. So, okay. So that's where you can find me.
I think a friend of mine is one of the writers on that show. I'll have to look it up again, but she mentioned something. So, yeah, she's also written for The Chi and Bel Air too. So,
nice. Yeah, you. So I think okay. See, yeah. I think you told me about this person. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome, Gina. Anything else that you want to say?
No, I think we covered it. I think we covered it all. I do kind of feel like that when. Like I had this little song go through my head when Aemon blasted Aegon. It was from The Lion King because he just can't wait to be king. Which it kind of felt like young and innocent, yet more Scar. Like they teamed up boy. Anyway.
Well, we shall see. I can't wait for the next episode. I'm not sure who we're having on. We're gonna have Bubba and Catfish in 2 weeks. And they're finishing up something else. I think they're doing Babylon Berlin or something with Double M Matt Murdock. So we'll figure out who we're having next week. Either way, thanks everyone for listening. Check out the show notes for links to Mike's show and to our Patreon and our website and all that. Send us an email, dvrpodcast@gmail.com. Join the Facebook group. Thanks for listening, downloading. Oh, we did get a very nice review, too, of a new listener who found us through, I think, True Detective. So we appreciate that greatly. All the reviews and all that kind of stuff. It's awesome. So, Derek Gailey's, motherfuckers. Peace out.
Peace.